Hi, I'm Liz Larson.
And I'm Bill McKenna. We're the hosts of the New Life Perspectives radio show.
We're also the creators of the Cogno Movement System, where we help you rewire your nervous system so you can rewire your reality.
Join us each week for great conversations, amazing guests, and cutting-edge information on health, consciousness, and the keys to transformation.
Some brain stories don't just surprise you, they rearrange what you think is possible. Today, I'm going to share five real cases, five different brains, and all of them absolutely fascinating, or what you might even describe as impossible. Today, we're going to explore what we think about the brain may not be true at all, and ideas surrounding brain function altogether. So I was very excitedly talking to my acupuncturist the other day about something I'd seen online about a person who essentially functioned without a brain. And I know that that sounds crazy. However, it was a real and true story. And I was telling her that this was one of the first topics that fascinated me when I began learning about the brain and the nervous system. So I know I've told you before, but if you're new here to this channel, this will be new for you. But both of my parents had catastrophic brain diseases in their older years. About 72, my mom came down with Parkinson's, and my dad started to show signs of Alzheimer's. So I went about learning absolutely everything I could about the brain and how it functioned and how the body could change the brain so that I could find a way to solve a problem for them, to solve this big, giant problem in our lives. So my parents really didn't have a reason to have these brain diseases. They just showed up. They didn't have the underlying causes that are related in general with these issues. Or so it seemed. So I went about studying literally everything about neurology that I could find. Dr. Norman Doidge and his books on the brain were some of the books that I read again and again. I've probably read them seven times by now, because he talked about how the body could change the brain and vice versa, about neuroplasticity and how flexible the brain could actually be. And he really challenged the idea that conventional neurology, conventional brain science, may not be up to date in what's possible for how the brain can change, grow, and heal. So in Dr. Doidge's books, he shared about the woman who created what is now called the Aerosmith School. And I'll tell you a little more about her later. But the moral of the story is she had only one hemisphere of her brain. And before her, it wasn't known that a person could survive with only one hemisphere of the brain. See, at that time, they weren't doing the surgeries to remove a hemisphere of the brain like they're doing now. But in that time, when this was discovered, she was an anomaly and she functioned fully. Her only issue is she had what is now considered maybe a learning disorder, but it's not a learning disorder. She just needed to learn a little bit differently, but was absolutely brilliant in her own right. Well, this sparked something in me. This idea that the brain can be completely different than what is known in Western medicine to be, and a person can still be whole and functional. And as I lay on my acupuncturist table talking about this to her, I was so excited and so animated and so refreshed with this amazing idea that I knew I had to share it with you guys this week. So, what does it mean to not have a traditional brain? Well, It means that for some people, their brain is less complete than what is normal. You've all seen what a picture of a whole brain looks like. So imagine a picture of a brain that there's only half. Imagine the picture of a brain where one portion in its entirety is removed. And then imagine what looks like basically an empty skull without what looks like a traditional brain at all. This is what we're discussing today. But it's not just the lack of an entire brain that we'll be discussing, it's the phenomenon that these brains work as well as yours or mine, assuming that we both have a full brain. The other issue is that in so many of these cases, there's no indication that there isn't an entire brain until the brain is scanned. And then for so many years, we didn't have the ability to scan brains. Throughout most of history, as far as we know, we could not scan the brain. There was no way to see inside until after a person was dead. So Western medicine and the ability to scan inside the brain is very, very new. So we don't really know that much about the organ that we call the brain. And we assign so many things to the brain, like memory, like vision. There's a visual cortex and an auditory cortex. And we assume that the left brain is more linear and the right brain is more creative. But again, these ideas are relatively new, really in the last 100 years. Back in the 1500s, in Leonardo da Vinci's time, they were cutting into bodies. It was highly illegal at that time. And by the way, Leonardo da Vinci was doing that under the Vatican when it was absolutely illegal and immoral to cut into an autopsy a body. But these early scientists, and they were not scientists at the time, they were heretics at the time, considered heretics at the time by the Vatican, which was the ruling class, at least of Western society. And they were looking, and so they were cataloging this organ that we called the brain. They were noticing at that time a possible nervous system without really much of an understanding of what it did. And then they started to build assumptions about what these organs did, what their function was, and what kinds of things they handled. So coming into more Western medicine in the early, late 1800s and early 1900s, when now we're looking at things a little more completely, we still made some assumptions because we didn't have the technology to really see electricity moving in the brain. We didn't have PET scans, which can now scan the activity of a brain. We didn't even really have MRIs to see the completeness or incompleteness of a brain. So we assumed, based on what we could see and know about our own humanness, that maybe the brain contains our memory. Because if a person got hit in the head, for example, sometimes they would lose their memory. So the assumption is memory is held in the brain. But where? And to this day, we really don't have that answer. The brain is really very much still an anomaly. So there have been advancements that allowed us to get an idea of, in general, how the brain handles information. But even so, most of the brain is considered unused. There's a myth that we only use 10% of the brain, and it is hotly contested and argued that that is the case. Why this is believed, we're not sure, other than the fact that modern science doesn't know how the brain really functions. And so, Cogno movement is born in part, on my part, out of this massive fascination that something else is possible. The question of what else is possible? If a person can live with a partial brain, if a person can live with a mostly damaged brain, if a person can function, more importantly, with a missing or partial brain, then what does that mean for the rest of us with a whole brain? What else is possible? And this is the question that continues to drive my work, my part of the cognitive movement system, and Bill's too, is what else is possible if these things are true? And what can we discover about this interface between the brain and the body that we call the nervous system, in how much it has a part in how we perceive reality, in how we take in information and then act and react on that information, how much this bridge between the brain and the body creates consciousness, how much this bridge between the brain and the body creates the meaning that then is projected and creates our reality. All of this continues to be my ongoing question: what else is possible? And what does it mean for how we can heal the brain? What does it mean for how we can change our consciousness? What does it mean for how our nervous system and brain and consciousness store information in terms of what's real and not real, and how much that can be changed? How much does this part of the body that connects the brain to the rest of the world, in fact, have to do with the reality that each of us individually actually experiences? So these really are my daily questions. Now, what do you know what it's like to be inside a head like mine? It's not fun all the time because the questions are constant. But what it really does, it allows me and all of our practitioners, all the people who are associated with the cognitive movement system, to have really, and there's no pun here, an open mind about what is possible with these organs. See, I believe that we're only at the beginning, the very, very, very tip of the iceberg where it comes to brain and nervous system science. So let's take our very first break and we'll hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio. Or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, and we are back. We are talking about brains and not brains. And I want to tell you that today I'm not here to try to prove a thesis. Actually, what I want to do today is share a little bit of the Cogna movement open-mindedness about brains, about nervous systems, about how this whole thing functions, and what else is possible. I want to share this fascination that I have with you, and to remind you that there may be more room for what's available, what's possible with the brain and nervous system, than you can even imagine as you hear my voice today. So let's dig in. I teased you with the five brain stories, and let's crack open this particular egg. You ready? Okay, so one of the most recent stories that absolutely fascinated me, in fact, I have watched this little bit video again and again and again at about a boy named Noah Wall out of the UK. And Noah at this time is between 3 and 4 years old. And the video about him, you can find it on YouTube. It's short. It's maybe 5, 6, 7 minutes long. And his brain scans actually sparked a "how is this possible" question. It has sent ripples throughout modern medicine. So this little boy was diagnosed actually in the womb. Our brain scans, our scans in general, the ability to see in the side of the body has gotten so great that we can now see a fetus and see inside their heads. We can see their brain as it grows. And on the scans that his mom had, there were early signs of major, major neurological complications. So they were expecting that this little boy may not actually live. They could see that he was probably going to have neurological disabilities. And, you know, at that time, I'm sure that his family was devastated to learn this. He was diagnosed right away with spina bifida, meaning that he would likely not walk. And his family described learning that he was missing a significant portion of brain tissue alongside other kinds of serious neurological issues. Later on in media coverage, Noah's story spread widely because of the dramatic claim often repeated in the headlines that he had only 2% of his brain. Yes, you heard correctly, 2% of his brain, paired with the idea that over time, his development and later imaging appeared far more hopeful than anyone ever predicted. See, these are kids that are called born with no brain. And most of the time, they are expected to die at birth or shortly after birth. Most of them don't live more than a couple of weeks. I have heard stories of them living a few years, but most of the time they don't survive. And that is what makes Noah's story so compelling. And so this isn't about like a viral story. This isn't about big headlines. This is about really a family that is extraordinary and the idea of what is truly possible when you think what else is possible when you give it a try. So his family was given a frightening picture of the future. And you know, many of these families are actually encouraged to abort a fetus that looks like this, knowing that they will have so many problems and not survive. They can't even be considered a non-viable pregnancy. But this family did something really unexpected, really, really different. What they did was, as Noah was born, and started to develop. They did absolutely everything they could to help this child grow mentally and neurologically. They say that every minute of every day, they are doing something with him to help his brain and body communicate with itself. So in this video, you'll see him sitting in like a high chair, and they're playing games with him. They're playing counting games. They're talking about stories. Now, this boy who is said to have only 2% of the brain and the rest of his head is supposedly filled with liquid, he is talking. And the way he speaks, from my estimation, having seen many kids with all kinds of neurological disorders, he looks brilliant. I mean, at 3 years old, he's quite articulate. He can figure things out. He's highly compassionate. He's very, very sweet. At one point in the video, his mother is crying, talking about how hard all of this is and the miracle of Noah. And he looks at his mom and says, "Mom, are you okay?" He can feel what's going on with her. He's highly empathic. He's counting. He knows his colors. Many other three-year-olds can't do any of this, and they're considered normal. Noah doesn't even really look like he's on the autism spectrum, which is interesting. So his only real problem is he does have spina bifida and he can't walk. But is it that he does have 2% of his brain? Is his brain growing? These are the questions. Is what his family doing creating more neural networks that function like brain tissue? Is his body taking over other parts of his nervous system in place of lacking brain tissue? These are questions that nobody knows. Noah is being studied at this point, literally to see what is possible. It's such an interesting and such a heartwarming story, but it shows how little we know. Without all of his brain, the parts that are missing, Noah shouldn't be able to see. He shouldn't be able to hear. He certainly shouldn't be able to talk. Noah, around 1 year old, was using a wheelchair with his hands, pushing it for himself. Where most kids are learning to walk, Noah's learning to use a wheelchair. How fascinating, right? How amazing. He really is an incredible human, despite the fact that his head is mostly filled with water. Interesting, right? Are you fascinated yet? I don't know. I still am. I could watch that video again right now. Let's move on to the next story. This is a story of a white-collar worker in France and a life that did not match the scan that he had. So this man is a middle-aged man with seemingly ordinary adult life. And he stunned the doctors when imaging scans revealed extreme hydrocephalus and a dramatic altered brain structure. So hydrocephalus is where the brain fills with water, and it can be devastating for people needing shunts to get the water off the brain. It can cause brain damage for people. It can also cause other neurological problems like spina bifida and other things as well. So this case became famous as it was published as a clinical picture in The Lancet. A 44-year-old man presented with a short history of mild leg weakness, and his medical history included hydrocephalus, treated with a shunt when he was in infancy. And a shunt is placed in the head so that the water can drain down into the natural lymphatic system. So he later on had a revision and the shunt was removed in adolescence, which can happen. Sometimes a person grows out of that. So this man's scan, he had a scan because he had this major or this problem, this minor weakness in his legs, which appeared to be a neurological problem. So the scan showed a massive ventricle enlargement, so striking that it created a major disconnect for many readers between what the image looked like and the person's real world functioning. The life context described in reporting around this case. It's the kind of story that instantly expands your sense of, you know, what in the world, right? What is possible? Not really as a debate point, but as a reminder that biology doesn't deliver a tidy, predictable narrative. So up until this man was 44, he'd had these problems, you know, a little weakness in the legs, the issue with the shunt, a known hydrocephaly. But what the scans really showed was that the man had very little brain, that most of his brain, most of his head was filled with water, and that his brain was kind of pushed up against the sides. And in his case, if I remember correctly, they thought that he maybe did have roughly 10% of his brain, but he functioned normally. His emotions were normal. His movement was normal. He worked. He could think. He could see. He could hear. He didn't even seem to have any kind of intellectual deficiencies. So how many more of us are functioning like this? If we don't have a reason to have a brain scan, and a brain scan really is rare, or a head scan, even looking at our brain, how many more of us have a non-typical brain, but is working, functioning in a way that we feel is normal? Super, super interesting. So let's talk about the next story. It's a Sheffield student in 1980, and it's sort of a legend that opened minds. So a decade-old account of a successful university student with extreme hydrocephalus became one of the most repeated brain paradox story in neuroscience. Now, you might be starting to see a pattern that fluid fills the head and creates that back pressure that makes what looks like a normal looking skull. There are other children who are born with only their brain stem and there isn't a hydrocephaly, so the head looks collapsed. It looks like only a face without the dome on the top of the head because there's really nothing to hold it open. Our skulls are relatively soft when we're born, and without the thing that fills that space, the brain looks flat. So this is interesting that there is something, in this case, water, fluid, brain fluid, that holds that head, the skull, in what looks like a normal shape. So in 1980, science journalist Roger Lewin published, "Is Your Brain Really Necessary?" I mean, I guess that's what we're really talking about, right? Describing the physician John Lorber's hydrocephalus observations, work that entered public consciousness because it included a highly memorable anecdote about a Sheffield University student described as socially normal, academically successful, consider that, and measured with a high IQ, despite his scans suggesting an extremely thinned cortex due to hydrocephalus. This story is part case discussion and part cultural lightning bolt. Because, you know, really we are taught that the brain is where intellect comes from, that our success has to do with how our brain functions. You know, geniuses are said to use a much greater surface area of the brain than the rest of us. But this student had a high IQ despite having very little brain. So if I remember this one correctly, it also looked like a hole in the center of the brain and the brain pushed out around the skull, like just a little thin area around the skull. So this story has been retold for decades because it hits a primal button. We think that function should be obvious from the structure. So if a person has a whole brain, if the whole structure is there, then the function should be there. And sometimes it just isn't. So whether this is a real historical example or a media legend or both, it serves our purposes perfectly because it invites awe and curiosity about how differently human nervous systems can organize and compensate over time. Because the truth is, there are many of us who do have the full structure of our brain and still have a lot of issues, a lot of emotional issues, a lot of cognitive issues, learning disorders, autism, many, many ways that the brain does not seem to function correctly. With CogniMovement, we're constantly questioning, is it the brain or is it the way the system is working within itself? And if you can reorganize that system, can you create real profound change? And the answer is yes, that is possible. We see it all the time. We see injured brains regenerate. We see injured brains recalculate themselves, reorganize themselves. We see brains that are given, you know, major and devastating diagnosis from birth, being able to function quite normally. And this is what matters here. This is what really matters here. The fact that these people have relatively normal function, even though they have radically unconventional or not normal structure. So if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that Bill and I are the creators of the CogniMovement system. And this is what we've been talking about in this episode and all the others, that the brain and the body have the ability to change dramatically and radically. If you have a problem, all you need to do really is discover the neurological pattern that is creating that problem. If you can change the pattern, then the problem often resolves itself. And I think that's what we're seeing here in these stories, is bodies that have created a natural resolution. Well, with CogniMovement, we have created a resolution that is also natural and easy to accomplish for those who know how to do it. And I would love for you to know how to do it. If you're interested in learning this method, changing something in your own brain, in your own body, in your own nervous system, in your own life, visit us at cognomovement.com/radio. And for UK Health Radio listeners, there is a special free class and a special discount for you on our Essentials program. All right, let's take a quick break and hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we are back and we're talking about people that have only partial brain and function amazingly. This one is a story of a hemispherectomy, meaning half of a brain removed or a partial lobe of the brain being removed intentionally through surgery. So some children who have things like epilepsy do have this procedure. It's the only way for the brain to stop the glitch that is happening inside the brain as far as medicine knows so far. And so it's very uncommon and it's often a last-ditch effort, but it is done. So some children, again, do have a part of their brain removed or disconnected early in life. And when that happens, they still grow into vibrant, functional humans. And this really reveals the nervous system's capacity to reroute. So Moore's story has been widely covered because it puts a face on a jaw-dropping category of cases. The reporting describes that Moira, had a stroke in utero that severely damaged the left side of her brain and led to really intense seizures. And this is common with things like cerebral palsy or Angelman syndrome. So when medication couldn't control the seizures, doctors performed a hemispherectomy, removing the damaged tissue of the left hemisphere to stop the relentless seizures. What makes this so fascinating is how it reframes what people consume half brain means. In fact, you know, before it was politically incorrect, people would call someone who seemed a little off half-brained. This is a complete and utter misnomer that a person who's half-brained is something less than fully conscious and rational and a normal intelligence and normal movement. So by all accounts, this person, Moira, was described in her teens as a person who plays soccer, tells jokes, and lives a full life. An example that naturally leads listeners towards a bigger question. If the system can reorganize itself after something this extreme happens, then what does it suggest about the range of human adaptability in less extreme circumstances, where a person has maybe had a concussion or a stroke outside of their uterus, or a major head injury due to illness or accident? Along the lines of this case, I actually have a friend, a very good friend, whose brother had this exact hemispherectomy. And for him, all of his memories are there. His memories are intact. He does not look or appear like he's had a stroke. He's fully and completely functioning. And, you know, when they remove a part of the brain, they never know what's going to happen. And for him, he just picked up where he left off and his seizures did stop, which made a huge difference in his life. So this is the story that really was the first time I ever heard anything about this. And this is a story about Barbara Arrowsmith Young and the Arrowsmith School. So turning this idea of possibility, or actually disability, into a method. So Barbara Arrowsmith was a child who really struggled with learning challenges. She was considered maybe less intelligent by her teachers. And, you know, they called, this was the early days of learning disability, but this woman actually ended up creating a school for children with learning challenges around the idea that targeted training, like Noah's that we heard about in the first story, could strengthen cognitive functions. And so this is really an origin story that is rooted in neuroplasticity. Barbara is known for describing her personal journey through significant learning disabilities and then creating targeted mental exercises that she used and she believed helped her improve. So the work that Barbara Arrowsmith created became an institution and it was called the Arrowsmith School and it was founded in Toronto in 1980, so not all that long ago. And later, in the broader Arrowsmith program. And what got me so interested is that she knew that movement and eye movement could help the brain restructure itself around these learning disabilities and create new neural pathways so that the person could begin to learn, not even in a normal way, but in an extraordinary way. So it took kids who in the past would have been rejected in academics and turn them into people who could learn not only well, but super well. So there's this kind of unexpected function here. This story is not about shocking scans, except for that. Here's the moral of this story. Barbara Arrowsmith was found to have been born with only half a brain. She only had one hemisphere. She shouldn't have been able to function at all. She should have not just had learning deficits, but deficits in movement, deficits in eyesight and hearing. She should have, by all, you know, Western medicine ideas, functioned as though she had had a stroke, but she didn't. Her only sign was that she had some learning disabilities. So what does this mean, again, about how much of this thing we call our brain that we actually have to have? And if parts of our brain are missing or damaged, can other parts of the brain take over? Now, this is what we know in CogniMovement. The possibility that other parts of the brain can take over when the brain and the nervous system is given a new option is endless. It's endless. We know that when parts of the brain are damaged due to injury or even due to emotional injury, trauma over time, the other parts of the brain can be signaled. Now, this happens through eye movement and then physical sensation. Here's the key about all of this, where CogniMovement comes in, that it's not just about the eyes and it isn't just about the brain. It's about the inputs that the nervous system gives through physical sensation. So one of the stories that we have is a girl who had global brain damage due to drowning at 7 years old. And we saw her this year at one of our practitioners' trainings, and we were able to work with her over 7 days with really some amazing changes. Now, one of the issues that her parents had is they wanted her to be able to walk on her own because it's very difficult for them to move her around. She's now a great big grown-up teenager. One of the things that we did immediately is start to create activation or sensation in her feet. And what we found is that sensation in her feet echoed throughout her entire body, creating a twitch high up in her shoulder. Now, we took that and gave it some coaxing through physical touch to reconnect with her brain. At that point, we did use some eye movement to reconnect. And what we did was found a way that that pattern could then reach her brain and send a signal back. Now, we just did it with touch, and it took a few minutes of signaling and re-signaling, giving it some feedback, before we started to get movement then in her thigh and then in her knee and then in her calf. And she was able to begin to start moving her legs more autonomously. Now, it's been about 4 months since we saw her, and many things have changed. So once you connect one new piece, the brain and the nervous system will take over and it'll create a whole lot more connections. Recently, I heard that she reached out, grabbed a cup and took a drink. Before we saw her this summer, there is no way she could have done that because she didn't have the neural connections. Neural connections can be reconnected and then regrown. So the question then becomes, what else is possible? Well, in this case for her, it's possible to change the way her brain and body are talking to each other. Another one of the kids that we've worked with who had definitely what you consider a subpar brain function because of Angelman syndrome, her brain has been reconnected in so many ways that she is now able to walk, able to hike, taking herself to the bathroom, and she's even starting to talk again. So it's not about curing any kind of a disease. We're not making those claims. The only thing we're saying is that when the body and brain are given the right stimulus, the right attention, and the right combination of sensation and focus on brain function through the eyes, that the body can start to restore itself. It's not that we're really doing anything. There's nothing being done to these people. There's only something that is allowing the system to begin to talk to itself again. These functions can be restored. And we have many clients who have had brain scans and that we can see where new parts of the brain are taking over. One of the companies that's doing really great work is the Dr. Daniel Amen Foundation, who is doing PET scans, who is really looking at this part of the body that creates, is seen to recreate so much of the way that we interact with this world. And the PET scan can see what part of the brain is receiving basically electrical signals and what isn't. It can see the parts of the brain that are dark, meaning there's no electrical signal there, and the parts that are lit up, meaning there is electrical signal there, and that part of the brain seems to function. In the past, an injured brain was not considered to be able to recover that part of the injury. And we are now seeing that that is possible. And it is changing the lives of people who in the past would have really suffered through these injuries or may not have had a life at all. So I just want to open this up to you. Do some research. If you have a chance today, look up on YouTube a person that has only 2% of the brain, or a man with no brain, or look up Barbara Arrowsmith and go down the rabbit hole of fascination. Join me in this fascination about what else is possible. And then reflect on your own life. Notice your own limitations. Notice where maybe you've had trauma or a physical injury, or maybe you yourself have a learning disorder. And ask this question: what else is possible for you? What else can you achieve if you simply knew how to create more access to the parts of your brain that you're not using? Or what else is possible if more of your neurological system could take over functions that they're not using right now? What else is possible in the life that you are creating from this moment on? Again, you guys, I really want to invite you to start exploring the cognitive movement system. And UK Health Radio listeners, we are now one of the sponsors of the UK Health Radio Network, and for that reason, we have created something special for you. If you go to cognomovement.com/radio, there's a free class that is there just for you. And it can help you find what hidden emotion might be holding you back. And with that hidden emotion is a hidden pattern, hidden neurological pattern, a hidden way that your brain and body are talking to themselves, their internal script. If that script can be changed, what could be released in your life? And that's what I invite you to find out with this free class, cognomovement.com/radio. All right, everybody, this was fun for me. I hope it was fun for you. Please, until next time, be safe and be well.
Thanks for being here with us on the New Life Perspective Radio Show. For more information or to find out more about the work that Bill and I do, please visit us at cognomovement.com or email us at info@cognomovement.com. See you again soon.